This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme, Editor-in-Chief of Feminem, and I'm introducing yet another fantastic Fix 17 talk for you today. This is Sex and Gender in Emergency Medicine by Allison McGregor, and Allison McGregor is an Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Director of the Division of Sex and Gender in Emergency Medicine at Brown University. And I'm not going to really tell you too much about this talk because I don't want to give away the goods. Dr. McGregor is so good in this talk. But I just want to let you know that the first time I heard it, it totally changed the way I thought about everything I knew about medicine and medical research and the practice that we do day in and day out. I think you're going to love this talk. Take a listen.
It's such an honor to be among so many amazing women and a few men. I have been such a fan of Dr. Dara Kass and all the members of FEMINEM and all the work that they do for women in emergency medicine. A quick round of applause. I'm here today to highlight an issue that I think is particularly important for women. Women as physicians, women as educators, women as leaders. There is a movement in the scientific community that is challenging the delivery of acute medical care. The components of sex and gender are increasingly becoming important components in health research, in congressional and federal policy, and public urgency. How do we incorporate these fundamental characteristics into our future? As we attempt to try to understand what it means to be a certain sex, that's your DNA, the DNA that's in every cell in your body, your heart cells, your lung cells, your liver cells, not just in your ovaries or your testes, they have major impact on health and disease. We are also beginning to realize that having human gender, male, female, transgender male, transgender female, or some combination of all of that, has major influence on gene expression, on various states of health and disease, and on your receivership to healthcare. The historical lack of the appreciation of the influence of biological sex on the pathophysiology of disease, and the historical lack of the influence of gender on the expression of illness has led to a public health crisis for women. You see, it wasn't until recently that women were even thought important enough to include in clinical trials. There was this convenient assumption that outcomes in men could be adequate proxies for outcomes in women. And so that's sort of what was happened. Right? You didn't have to control for the stage of the menstrual cycle, which was constantly fluctuating. Many researchers said, I want to study men because I want to find out what's really going on. And they did. They found out what was really going on in men. You see, if we're studying all the big ones, heart disease, stroke, cancer, sepsis, trauma, in men, what's the one thing we can't study in men? Menstruation, menopause, giving birth, even breast health. So then we had to study those things in women, and what happened was that became synonymous with women's health. It essentially trapped all the efforts into providing medical care for women into only those issues. So the evidence that you utilize in the emergency department to treat your female patients, heck, the evidence that your doctor utilizes to treat you is still primarily based on the male model. But we're also successful clinical researchers, and so we need to know that this has changed. As of 2016, the NIH says that you must include sex as a biological variable in the analysis, in the interpretation, the validation, and then the generalizability of the outcome. And if you don't, you actually have to explain why now. the tables have been turned. The onus is on the researcher. It's not just about obtaining funding. It's making sure that we're designing our studies to detect clinically relevant differences. Because when you take a step back and you look at the delivery of healthcare, we see disparities. Women who have atrial fibrillation are less likely to be anticoagulated. And then when they come into the emergency department with their stroke, they're less likely to receive TPA. Women who have a myocardial infarction are less likely to be on evidence-based therapies. And then when they come into the emergency department and their cardiac arrest, they're less likely to receive invasive measures like targeted temperature management. Our current guidelines and protocols are not gender sensitive, and we need to increase our willingness to incorporate these components into our current practice model with a better understanding of men and women's specific pathophysiology. What do we do? How do we change and bridge this gap of knowledge, this lack of data on women? Well, the first thing we need to do is have this cognitive transformation, okay? We have to change the fact that we have always considered not knowing if there are differences between men and women as meaning no differences between men and women. Not knowing is not knowing. So let's start acknowledging the absence of evidence. The second thing we need to do is, as this evidence is starting to come up exponentially, we need to have processes in place where it just integrates into residency education and bedside clinical practice. If I were to leave you with one tool, it would be this. This is a validated PubMed search tool published in the Journal of Women's Health by colleagues of mine, and it is awesome. It takes whatever search term you're looking for, stroke, hypertensive emergency, appendicitis, and it combs the literature and it picks out those few studies where it demonstrated sex differences. So this is a very easy tool to utilize the gender lens when you're practicing clinically. The other thing we need to do is change the way we communicate. I think anyone here can realize how powerful vocabulary really is. So we need to stop viewing male pattern disease as typical and then viewing female pattern disease as atypical from that, because this is really simple. This is simply sex-specific patterns of diseases. There are sex-specific patterns of diseases that are typical for men, and then there are sex-specific patterns of disease that are typical for women, and we need to reserve the word atypical for any variations from that. It's this simple way of viewing men and women as equal, but potentially medically different. In order to make the kind of change that we're talking about here, we need your passion and your awareness. Join the SAM Sex and Gender Interest Group. This is a fast-growing interest group, very collaborative in nature. We are talking about projects. We're talking about what's going on in the federal landscape. Join the conversation. At Brown, we have a division called Sex and Gender in Emergency Medicine, where we add to the literature. We have educational programs for medical students, for residents, and we have a very successful two-year fellowship program, either in research or education. I would like nothing more than to help you establish a similar program in your department. In conclusion, the Institute of Medicine has said repeatedly that being a man or woman significantly alters the course of a disease, and that this fact must be included into our diagnosis and our therapies. We have this opportunity, and I would argue an obligation, to learn how our patients' sex and gender affects the clinical care we provide. The sooner we learn to incorporate this into our clinical practice, into the way that we educate and into the way that we lead, the sooner we can make a difference. We are making great progress, but now our future is about getting it right. Thank you.